blasters won't stop firing.
I think I'm being followed.
My dad is turning green, like, literally green.
My last nav check put me on Lagrange Point 4.
This is Control, via radio. Keep calm and remain on the guard frequency.
Sits and sibs, captains and commanders, you're tuned to the guard frequency, and as all good pilots know, when you're out in the deep black, you want to keep one ear on the guard. This is episode 185 of the best dim space sim podcast ever, and was recorded on Friday, September 15th, and made available for download Tuesday, September 19th, over at guardfrequency.com. I'm Ostron.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Kinshadow. And in the audio booth this week is the master of anacondas himself, Henry.
So, what do we have this week, Kinshadow?
In this week's Squawk Box, it's the end of the 13-year voyage for Cassini. Next, we see what news from your favorite space sims has landed as we cover the latest controversy surrounding bug counts and refunds for Star Citizen. And the Thargoids are going to be 3 weeks late, making someone's prediction slightly wrong for Elite Dangerous. Finally, we tune to the feedback loop and let you join in the conversation.
Good people of the verse, lend us your ears, or rather, your audio talents. Guard Frequency are looking for additional audio engineers to join the crew. So if you've got a good ear for detail, know your fade-ins from your high-pass filter, and think you can lend us an hour each week, we'd love to hear from you. Doubly so if you're a keen fan of tabletop RPGs. If you're interested, drop us a tweet, a message on Facebook, or an email to squawk@guardfrequency.com.
That takes care of the housekeeping, so let's get on with the show and see what's coming through the squawk box.
Any of you boys need a carrier around here?
Everything's under control. Situation normal.
Crypto, this is Jeff saying welcome to the squawk box, everyone. Space news rarely pops into mainstream media coverage unless there's a disaster or Elon Musk is, you know, throwing some media video up there. But Cassini managed to buck the trend. The probe of Saturn, which we mentioned ourselves a few weeks ago when it darted into a space between a planet and its rings, is now no more. At 4:55 a.m. Pacific time on September 15th, the NASA JPL got about 30 seconds of atmospheric data from the probe before there was a massive spike in data readouts and then communication went silent. Cassini launched in 1997 and entered orbit of Saturn in 2004. Since that time, it's transmitted multiple images and data of the planet and its moons, landed a probe on the moon Titan, and transmitted information about Enceladus and Titan that now have scientists wondering at the potential of life in these areas. Scientists are still eager to learn more. For example, we still don't know how long Saturn's day is. However, the data that has been gathered will keep people busy for years. Especially the bit of atmosphere and data they got from Cassini's final approach. Cassini was destroyed on purpose. After 13 years, the probe was running out of fuel used in maintaining and correcting the probe's position. Because of the potential for life on some of the moons, the scientists wanted to reduce the possibility of contamination as much as possible. So they slingshot Cassini around Titan and put it on a course for destruction. The final scene at JPL was reminiscent of a party with all the past and future members of the team in attendance, as well as a few other interested parties. The crowd was big enough to warrant Jumbotron set up on the lawn outside. Unfortunately, there are no other probes or missions to Saturn currently in development, but most of the scientists believe it's only a matter of time.
It's sad to see it end, but it was a heck of a mission.
I think it's a great achievement for our space exploration program. I remember when Cassini was launched and was excited when, you know, we were doing that kind of thing. I think that's back when we still had a space shuttle program and all that other stuff and hoped we'd get back to the moon and all that. But I think anytime we have a success on that round is a good thing.
I remember when the Huygens probe landed and I was watching these pictures come back and you can see, like, I think there were lakes there. I don't remember if it was false color or what. I remember a lot of yellows. That was very
well,
cool.
Well, the lakes on Titan, if I remember correctly, are liquid hydrocarbons.
Yeah, so that'd be like methane and
so,
stuff.
So, yeah, liquid methane and ethane. Yellow's not a wrong color, but, I mean, all the images that they get back from the probes are in black and white.
Yeah, I think they're all artist conceptions. So. Or, I'm sorry, a false color when they get them back.
Right. So somebody takes the images and just applies, okay, if you assume these colors are in play, this is what it looks like.
And I think the goal most of the time with coloring those things is to express some feature of what you're seeing. Like, they might color it in a way that shows its radioactivity or its heat or something like that. So it might not be painted in visible light. So people get misconceptions about images from space a lot.
Yeah, it's basically topographical mapping, the same way they do with, or they used to do with, paper maps of terrain. Like, the colors have nothing to do with what is actually there. It's just a measure of how big something is.
What do you guys think of them crashing it on purpose rather than letting it float around out there? Think contamination's a realistic possibility?
Well, I mean, not wanting to contaminate Enceladus makes sense, but I mean, they already landed the probe on Titan, and they didn't get it back, so I feel like that ship has sailed.
It feels like something they say once in a while about some probes, but then just completely forget about the fact that we land things all the time that are dirty as what we're, you know, crashing into the planet to save from contamination. So I don't understand where they get the standard, where they decide what can land and crash and what can't.
Oh, I think I do. I think it's the job of the Planetary Protection Office, as we discussed weeks ago.
Yeah, it's probably just a matter of, like, acceptable risk.
I must have missed, like, that
we
discussion.
We can avoid...
You don't remember the Planetary Protection Officer and the whole discussion about the gun and...
I think that was one of the weeks Henry was, unfortunately...
Yeah, I got injured a couple of weeks ago, and I was down.
Yeah, but I think, back to your original point, it's more a matter of not wanting to increase the amount of contamination and just sort of accepting, well, we have to land the probe and that's just going to be a thing, but we don't want to compound the problem.
Red Seen or heard something that you might think is interesting to others listening on the spectrum? Send an email to squawk@guardfrequency.com. But for now, let's see what news is at the plate.
Speed 175, Port Bay, hands on approach, trigger screen, call the ball.
Don't get technical with me.
This week's burndown report indicates that CIG has reduced the number of blocking issues from 76 all the way down to 26. That's quite an impressive amount of progress, right? Well, that depends on how you look at it. We're going to quote the text on the most recent production schedule update here.
While a number of these bugs are simply resolved due to the team's usual endeavors, our director's reviews have been keenly focused on core player loops, which has led to a redefinition of must fix. In short, we've decided that we need to get this into Ivocati hands sooner rather than later. We are simply going to accept that there will still be additional issues to resolve, but we want your feedback now. So we have readjusted our numbers to reflect bugs that are blocking the core experience. Game loops, missions, commodities and shopping, to name a few. We want you traversing the Verst, landing on planets, and generally testing 3.0 while we continue to polish and bug fix more features that can be passed along for testing.
This announcement had some backers crying foul. They understood the burndown to be a track of all issues blocking the full 3.0 release. Now that they aren't tracking the full release, the question is, what is the burndown really saying? It tracks the blockers until the more focused build is complete. But that really only benefits the Ivocati as far as anyone can tell, because there's been no announcement that 3.0 itself will get a wider release with limited features. Others point out that this doesn't really change anything. Now the Ivocati will be getting focused areas to test, which means it's more likely they'll uncover bugs in those specific sections that might have been missed if they'd gotten the whole block at once. Plus, there's no evidence that this is going to take any more time than development would if they'd waited until all of 3.0 was ready to be pushing onto the Ivocati.
These types of debates and speculation may be symptomatic of a wider issue. Despite the progress CIG is making and the reassurances from Gamescom and other news, the continued delays in releasing 3.0 are encouraging skeptical parties in various places to increase their volume. As we covered in this very podcast, the initial announcement of the delay dragged the Nine Voices of Star Citizen infographic out and got it shared widely among backers, causing, and some say encouraging, certain backers to out themselves as skeptics or actually doubting the project. More recently, a thread in the Star Citizen underscore refund subreddit presented evidence that a backer, who is actually representing an organization, since Star Citizen still lacks the concept of ships or assets owned by an org, successfully asked for and received a refund of $45,000. The money had supposedly represented three completionist pledge packages. This claim was later refuted by CIG PR Chief David Swafford, who stated that the actual refund was only $330 and that the inflated amount appeared to be Photoshop chicanery.
It could even be argued that the Eurogamer site is either jumping on or aware of the renewed controversy from the article published earlier in the week. Though the content was a mundane transcript of an interview with Chris Roberts from Gamescom and contained no leading questions or telling replies from Chris, the subtitle of the article was, quote, Star Citizen would be the worst scam in the world, unquote. And the phrase was chosen in the article's URL. While it was a direct quote from Chris, taken almost entirely out of context, it provided interesting results for search engine bots. Ultimately, however, the slightly higher profile controversy hasn't yet revealed or highlighted anything new or damaging. As mentioned, the article that had subtitle about Star Citizen being a scam had no accusatory questions or new information suggesting something was amiss. The refund thread suggested that the refund was prompted by, quote, evidence presented the committee of Chris Roberts blatantly lying, unquote. But such evidence was not shared.
That pattern repeats in many places that announce issues with the project. They will espouse upcoming or privileged information suggesting clear problems, but if the information is revealed at all, it's often circumstantial or relies on convoluted interpretation to make its point. Also, people suggesting that the purported larger refund is the first crack in the dam preventing the release of SE funds to disgruntled backers are ignoring the rest of that subreddit, where there is evidence that a refund of some kind is issued at least every other day, and that's the only ones reported by Redditors. So, at the end of the day, despite the increased noise, everyone is waiting. Either the 3.0 release will proceed, or something catastrophic will occur. Pretty much business as usual. I think it's a much hubbub about nothing. Seriously. When I read that, the reason I paused at the first part of that, it's like, you know, doomsayers are going to be doomsayers, regardless of how you present the information or what's really going on behind the scene. And it just gets proven every time we come out with something like this that, you know, there's huge cries among the intertubes. And, you know, they get all jammed up because everybody thinks this game is not coming to fruition. I may not see it by the end of 2017. I may not see it by the end of 2018. But this game will come to be.
Yeah, it just was another issue where I think they were trying to describe a development scheduling strategy that works well and looks good in development circles, but is really difficult to translate to the real world.
Well, I'm really glad of, though, Ostron, is the fact that they evaluate every week that they evaluate the burn down and they make adjustments to their development accordingly. And that tells me that they're not so rigid that they can't go with the flow, so to speak.
So Evocati, you know, there's much hullabaloo because people feel special when they're in Evocati, right? And there's a whole NDA and stuff there. But really, Evocati is just the first stage of PTU. When it goes from Evocati to normal PTU or starts the PTU waves, because remember, this is going to be a wave just like everything else, and it'll be like 1,000 people in each wave, and people will get pissed they're not in waves and everything like that. But once it gets to Evocati, then the barrier to start into real PTU is much lower, and typically it's a matter of weeks after that. So, you know, the hope here is once this burn down happens or gets to zero and you get an Evocati release, then at least we'll see a lot more. The progress at least will be a little more clearer to the actual PTU release and then eventual release. I think some people are going to be frustrated no matter what here, though, because what they really want is a not bug-free 3.0, but a playable 3.0 in their hands as soon as possible. And so if SIG is really tracking what are blocking things to 3.0 and what are blocking things to just Evocati release, they should put both of those numbers on the chart. Why not, right? I think that would be fair. I understand why they're not, because it's probably a scary number. It's probably much higher. And
you know, from a marketing and public perception, it's probably also kind of confusing to have those two numbers there. So I understand why they're doing it. I would rather see a little more information on exactly what they feel like they're fixing, what they have left before release.
And I think that sort of lands on the main complaint that the rational people have, is that it's now very confusing as to what Burndown is tracking, because they're tracking an Evocati release. Like, they were always tracking the Evocati release. Even before this week's update, it said Burndown to Evocati. So everyone knew that the zero target was when it was going to be released to the Evocati, and then, like Kim Shadow said, it would follow the Evocati PTU waves, that whole process. The question that's up in the air now is, because they said that it's going to be a limited release that they will then add on to later, it's unclear as to how far down the track that's going to be pushed. So is it going to come out for Evocati and then sit there until they get all the 3.0 features in, and then only after that point is it going to move to PTU? Or is the abbreviated, like, extra focus version going to go all the way to PTU? Or are they even going to do extra focus versions going all the way to a full release and then add in the extra gameplay later as, like, incremental patches to the live release? None of that has been outlined, and I think that's part of why people are so frustrated, because they have no idea what that countdown is actually marking now and how it's going to affect when they get to play the game.
Well, I don't think the focusing is different releases per se. From the statement that they put out, to me what that means is that they looked at the list of blockers they had, things that were causing crashes or things that made the game unplayable in some way. And then they compared them to those few sets of core experiences, the gameplay loops, missions, commodities, etc. And they said, which of these blockers apply to those loops? Okay, that's the number we need to have fixed before we give it to Evocati. That's what I got from this whole focusing thing, not that you're going to get different feature releases or anything like that.
We can interpret this statement all we want, but in the end, we're going to get to play it.
Yeah, but I mean, the counter argument there being, if we're just supposed to wait on CIG's pleasure, then why are they telling us anything?
I believe that it's good practice.
I think a lot of people pledged for this project, not only because it was outside the publisher model, but it's because they give the visibility they give. It's understood that you're going to see behind the curtain, that you are pledging in at least some part to be part of this adventure. And the Burndown stuff, I think, is actually a good example of SIG fulfilling its promise to show us the nitty-gritty behind the game development. I think this is
I'll give you that.
Jason mentioned on the chat that they should have broken 3.0 into smaller patches and given us in finer stages. And I actually kind of agree with that, but I think they're past that point. I think they've already decided what's in 3.0, designed some of these missions and stuff around all these features that are in 3.0. And at this point, I think for them, separating them out into finer grains is probably more effort than just simply fixing the crap they have.
But aren't we just getting the core anyway? I mean, isn't that what we were, you
know? No, I mean, 3.0 has a whole bunch of stuff in it, right? It's yeah. A lot of that stuff you saw during the presentation. It's landing on planets and,
oh my gosh.
It has a whole new mission system in it. And
it doesn't have the face over IP. It doesn't have the Idris. I don't think it has the dynamic competitive missions that everyone's so paranoid about either. But yeah, it's still got a tremendous amount of content that they're working on putting together, even without the extra bells and whistles that are supposed to be coming later.
So moving on to the other stuff here, that the Eurogamer thing was a decent interview, no information, but the subtitle thing is that's Eurogamer. I mean, I think somebody on staff hates Star Citizen, and they've taken digs at like the game like that before.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's a subtitle on the article. Like, it's honestly, if you pull it up and just do like a scan, it's very easy to completely miss that it's even a subtitle at all. But the thing that sort of was suspicious is, as was pointed out, the URL for the article uses the subtitle rather than using the main title for the article. Now, if you search on Google, the main title is what pops up on the bar. But search engine optimization uses a lot of different variables, but the URL for whatever you're searching for is a major factor in how it filters the information.
You know, like,
I pulled it up just a minute ago, I searched for Eurogamer Star Citizen scam, and it was in the top four results based on that, despite the fact that the article has nothing to do really with, like, if I were searching for evidence that Star Citizen was a scam, this article would pop up as one of the first things, even though there's no real information in there that would help me in my case.
That's actually a good thing, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's good that there's no evidence that Star Citizen is a scam in that article, or as far as we know anywhere else. Like we pointed out, everyone coming up and saying that the whole thing is falling apart and it's a hoax only has speculation or wildly convoluted reasoning that wouldn't pass any sort of jury.
I call shenanigans there. I think that was probably either the original title of the article and somebody swapped it, you know, before it went to print, quote unquote, or somebody was implicitly picking that URL for search engine optimization, right? Either way.
Yeah.
On the last thing, that the whole thing had goon written all over it. It's like, okay, it's a goon prank. Move on.
You mean the refund?
The refund, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was a weird thing, too. Like, an org buying three completionist packages? What kind of idiots would do that at the end of the day? That seems really silly.
Well, if the org is really, really large and you want to make sure that there's a substantial number of ships available.
But anyway, I'm just saying that, you know, if you're buying ships for an org, completionist package is not your best bang for your buck. I definitely would have spent that money differently. And so it's heartening to know that no org is as stupid to buy three completionist packages and nothing else.
Well, we don't know that none did. We just know that one did.
Well, if you're an org and all you have bought for your org is three completionist packages, come see me and I'll tell you how to better spend your money in the Star Citizen.
Or even one completionist package.
No, one is... Okay, so one makes sense because you get an Idris and it gives you a token for the option to buy a Javelin. And so if you don't want to fight with the dregs of society that are clicking the button as fast as possible for Idris's and Javelins, it actually makes sense. And then you can upgrade all the other ships in the completionist packages being CCUs. But like half of the ships, it's like you get three Freelancer variants and like three Connie variants. I'm like, what the hell is that? What an org going to do with all those weird variants and crap like that? Really, you want a CCU all stuff and reasonable stuff.
Just a side note, I question whether somebody who can drop $2,500 on a destroyer can actually be called dregs. But
it was hyperbole for comedic effect, Ostrom.
as was the correction.
It is these common plebeians who can't buy a completeness species and must wait in line for the $3,000 spaceship. I would never do such a thing. I just go for the $15,000 package. Actually, it's 18 now, isn't it? Something like that.
I haven't checked.
This week's Star Citizen Community Question. What was your reaction to SIG's burn down and the bug count adjustment? Are you getting distracted by the noise or just staying the course? Let us know through our usual channels. Details coming up.
They're late, but they're here. Well, they're on the way, really. Like, we've got a date and everything now is the point. The Thargoid Menace is scheduled to arrive with the 2.4 patch on September 26, 2017. This is, of course, a mere 21 days after our base 8 mathematical prediction. And when you think about it, that's not too shabby. I mean, the Mayan calendar 2012 guys were way off. Anyway, based on a short video trailer entitled Commander Chronicles: The Retaliation, the Aegis group has developed weapons that will now damage the previously indestructible Thargoid flower ships. Unfortunately, the group still has some work to do in the categories of 1, making that damage permanent, and 2, defending against the inevitable, wait for it, retaliation.
There are also a number of under-the-hood changes that we covered in the multiple beta patches Frontier deployed last month. The highest impact changes will likely be the rebuy penalties, known as Pilots Federation's bounties, issued for killing other players without in-game justification, and the changes to the mission stacking. Expect a link in our show notes when the patch goes live in 2 weeks with a full list of changes. And for those who are just overly curious about the Harbingers of Doom, lead designer Sandro Sammarco and community manager Ed Harris discussed the official Thargoid lore on a live stream Thursday night. They covered basically everything that has been revealed through the various Galnet articles, in-game events, and companion fiction. There's a handy summary for what's known on the forums, as well as the recording of the stream itself, if you want to get educated. We'll have the links to both in the show notes.
And even though our insect overlords are fast approaching to seal the fate of our species, there is some good news. They might not be the only potential hostile aliens out there. That's right. According to an article in PC Gamer, we still have 99.996059% of simulated Milky Way galaxy left to explore. Hard-working, industrious commanders into the deep black have logged exploration data on 15,779,755 systems so far, or less than 0.004% of the available systems. Come on, people! You've had nearly 3 years to get this done. Let's get out there and find some dragons or a slime beast or something else to cause our extinction.
Are there any other alien races in Elite Dangerous?
In Elite lore?
In lore, from what I understand, there are some relics from ancient races. There's the Guardians, where you have their ruins that we've been to that are still active, and you can do missions there to scan for data and find out all about their civilization. Then you have the Thargoids, which humanity has interacted with in the recent history, a couple hundred years ago, I believe. And they are making a comeback. And there's a great video out now about the lore on that, where they showed the commercial for the upcoming release. They talked a lot about the lore in the video where that was first released. I forget what that video was called, but we'll find a link to it, I'm sure. And then as far as other races, there's something called Suntil Relics, which I think are not Thargoid in origin, but they might be. I believe they're from a third race. And there are planets all over the place that are inhabited by life. They're just not, you know, sentient or advanced in any way. So there's probably going to be more races in Elite down the road, I would expect, because we've got at least two confirmed and possibly three, depending on who those relics to, the Suntil relics, belong to. I think there's even lore about a relic having been found on Mars in the distant past, so there could have been another race there, unless that was connected to the Guardians in some way.
So at the end of the day, unlikely to find space dragons.
Space dragons, I wouldn't expect it, no. Although, I gotta say, I feel like I've personally been to more than 0.004% of the planets, but maybe not. I mean, you go from star system to star system, you make hundreds and hundreds of jumps, and then you look at how little has been explored, and you're just in awe at how big the universe actually is.
Speaking of space dragons, that video that they showed with the, I guess, the Thargoid teaser thing,
yeah,
and, that kind of felt like a space dragon in some ways there, too.
The way it's groans when they shoot it is interesting. I get that they're showing this large organic ship and it's got these moving parts, then you'd have this big creaking noise and it sounds like a groan, and I think that's cool. You wouldn't hear it in space necessarily, but yeah, I get what you're saying there. You do get the idea that this is some massive organic being you're fighting when you're fighting a Thargoid ship, I'll bet.
Speaking to the theoretical gameplay, they showed three large ships. I don't remember exactly which ones they were.
I think,
but
one was
unloading
a Python. They weren't the biggest ships in the game. They were like mid-level.
Yeah, but you saw three of them unloading all of their missiles, and then the Thargoid immediately healing from all the damage it just took, and then basically wiping them out with its salvo.
Yeah, and that didn't look like they're saying that might have been like its missiles or something. But if you look at the video close, you can see that those projectiles are firing laser bursts or something at the ships as they fly past them. So I think they might be tiny fighters. Although I think that's a whole lot of fighters to have to try to battle with, unless they're going to be really, really fragile.
Right. And then, but it kind of goes back to the original discussion we were having about how will Thargoid battles go in the future. And it does, at least from this, where they're talking about like a wing having to battle it, it is more kind of a raid style encounter in traditional MMO parlance.
It'd be interesting to see him put something like that in there. Elite's had its solo components so long, I don't know if raid style content is going to do well for them. It may. I think it's more deep than the gameplay is going to get, honestly. I think we're more likely to see ships that are really powerful, really tough to take down, and if they want to try to force it to be a group event, they're just going to make them really, really hard. I think that's as far as the depth will go. Actually, we might want to mention that we said they're late, but they're not actually late. Tony's prediction was wrong, right? So we're not saying the update is coming out later than expected. I mean, they haven't missed any deadlines. They're just getting around to announcing that.
So, yeah, it was just to be fair. And it was actually my prediction, but
oh, I thought that was Tony. Matter. My bad.
No,
you'll get credit for all the wrong predictions from now on. No sweat.
You're good. Everybody has to have a hobby. But that's yeah, it. So that is worth clarifying. As far as we know, the only time they've suggested it was ever going to come out. Our Elite Dangerous Community question. Are you scared yet? Running for Colonia? Or do you wish they would hurry up and invade already? How much of that 99.996% of the remaining galaxy can we put you down for? We'll tell you how to get your answers to us after feedback.
But now it's time for news we didn't use. The Jump Point magazine for Star Citizen subscribers should be released for the month. If you're in the club, go get the downloads.
A new space sim has hit our radars. Helium Rain is currently on Steam Early Access and looks like your usual exploration, trading, and combat sim. Our research badgers should have a review for us next week.
Elite Dangerous Premonition, the novel written based on the Salome community event, released back at the end of August. If you want to know how the story came out in prose, you can pick up a copy for yourself.
So this Helium Rain sounds kind of interesting. I'll actually be looking forward to what our research badgers say next week.
A look at the Steam page, and it's heavily focused on trading. Like, I didn't actually see much mention of combat in there, although I didn't read it in great depth.
But some of us are into that. That'll be cool.
Yeah.
It's what we like about the X series.
Yeah, I was about to say.
The gameplay description did remind me very much of the X series, actually.
Is it single player or multiplayer?
It appears to be single.
Does it have VR? Is it in cockpit? Can you use a HOTUS? Maybe we should do a report on it.
Find out next week!
Yeah. All that information will be in next week's show, assuming our badgers don't take the week off.
Now that we're all caught up with the latest news, let's tune in the feedback loop and let you join in on the conversation.
Okay, buddy, what's on your mind?
We're all friendlies! So let's just be friendly!
Some say he's hunting the Mars rover after the death of his feline companion. Apparently, curiosity killed the cat. But all we know is he's called the Shiv. Any help put together this week's feedback?
A recap of last week's community questions. Do you think stamina is going to help with immersion or interfere with game balance? How do you rate the camera work on ATV?
Does the new approach for Eve Valkyrie interest you? Is the class-based approach to ships a good idea for multiplayer space combat?
Sean Newboy writes in and says, that was one polished, shiny gigaw of a show. Stamina is necessary. I enjoyed first-person shooters for a while until I got tired of the soldiers in full gear with a large backpack holding a squad assault weapons doing combined jumping slash sprints for a mile.
The Shiv says stamina will break balance until they balance it. If you're floating in space and firing a sniper rifle, shouldn't the recoil kind of be a problem? And that's a great point, Shiv.
The thrusters on your suit are actually supposed to balance anything you're firing in Star Citizen. And I think, no, quote me on this, I can double check after the show, but your suit thrusters actually fire when you fire in order to keep you in position, like you see them fire.
Amontillado writes in and says, I think the stamina system is sounding great. I'm very happy with the amount of detail they are pouring into this, and I'm hopeful that this is an indication of what they will do for medical gameplay as well. Medical gameplay needs some serious depth, way beyond what they've expressed in the past. I think stamina is a tool to establish game balance, not threaten it. As to the camera work on ATV, that's the least of my concerns. There's a line where shoddy production values are an embarrassment, holiday live stream, but last week's ATV didn't come close to it.
That's a good point. We haven't seen anything on the medical side besides like the heel gun or like the stim stick thing for a while. So you're right that this gives us a finer detail into something they haven't talked about a good bit.
Stephen Hunter writes in and says, stamina will help with immersion. At any rate, a sniper will eventually take their eye off the ball and get a rocket in the face, especially if I'm the sniper.
Nimrod77 says, stamina is something that can add a really cool level of immersion, but could also be very annoying if not done well. The last thing I want to see is the stamina being the boost fuel of FPS, which is what it sounds like. The anti-G strain maneuver, AGSM mechanics the devs spoke about sound great, if done well. Everything they spoke about in relation to the actor status system can be great or terrible, depending on how the designers tune it. Look at how different ship flight can be by a few changes to the XML values. And we all know how divisive that can be.
And in general feedback, Felipe DeWalliff writes, just watched the latest ATV. Here's what springs to my mind. Go get this box. Simple mission. 1. Get in your ship and fly to the destination. 2. Change to your heavy armor. 3. Fight your way through FPS levels to get the box. 4. Take the box. 5. Fight your way back to your ship, this time carrying a box. CIG are building the wall into which they are going to eventually crash. Keep it simple, make sure it works, then build on it, guys.
Schmunkle98 writes in and says, are Tony and Lennon ever coming back? No offense to the new guys, but I missed the original trio. So, I don't know if you've been listening lately, but Tony occasionally makes appearance, usually filling in if Henry or Kin Shadow are out and we get prior notice. Lennon's life schedule doesn't really allow for him to participate that often. Him being in London and given our recording time, it's a little inconvenient for him to participate. But it's possible he may be worked in somehow in the future. For right now, it's just certain things in the copy that get blamed on him, either rightfully or erroneously. And he also does occasionally lend his voice to the prelude scripts.
He also helps with the audio editing with our audio editor, Mikey, providing some direction and audio editing expertise in some cases. So he is still involved with the show. You just don't hear him as his beautiful, beautiful British voice as much as you would like.
Mandreas3 writes in, I don't know. While I love the original guys, aw, thanks, and everyone on the current episodes, I'm really glad they've added Kin Shadow to the mix nowadays. He seems to still have a bit of passion for Star Citizen. Also, his unique personality insights work well in the mix with the others, in my humble opinion. I also find that the tension between Kin Shadow and Tony interesting and amusing when they occasionally get a bit heated in a debate. But who am I kidding? You know, the only reason I tune in is to listen to the great immortal himself. I got a fan. What can I say?
And Henry and Ostron are cool, too.
Who?
You're right about the tension between Kin Shadow and Tony, though. Those two should just kiss already.
Who says we don't? No, I mean, we... No. The whole thing with Tony, like, we actually love debating each other so much that we do it on our, like, our chat and stuff, even between the shows, and it annoys the crap out of the rest of us.
You guys missed about 80% of the back and forth between those two. I mean, it's not unproductive, but it's just when the rest of us get back there, we come back and see a notice that you missed 67 messages, and we're like, I was gone for an hour and a half. What the hell?
And they're all messages of Tony going, lawyer, 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 and Kin Shadow going, Star Citizen is Star Citizen, so Star Citizen, Star Citizen, and Tony goes, law, law, law. That's pretty much it.
Well, Tony's a lawyer, and I'm an engineer, and we both basically argue with people for a living. And so when we get on the topic of, like, passion projects that we love, it is in both of our natures to argue about them. But thank you very much for the feedback, Mandreas, and the check is in the mail. Ken from Chicago writes in and says, reduced doesn't mean the same as fixed. But that Sig heated Board Gamer UK's question, isn't it the Evocati's job to bug test? And I guess going to this week's point, Ken from Chicago's feedback is somewhat on the nose, meaning that it is, you know, getting it to the Evocati maybe the wise decision here. At least we'll see a bunch of NDA leaks and interesting content coming out from the other users anyway.
No new Patreon this week. But the random winner this week of our cool swag, as we call it, is Thomas Westman. Yay! And this week's community questions are, what was your reaction to CIG's burndown and bug content adjustment? Are you getting distracted by the noise or just staying the course?
For Elite Dangerous, are you scared yet? Running for Colonia? Or do you wish they would hurry up and invade already, damn it? How much of that 99.996% of the remaining galaxy can we put you down for?
Drop us an email, a tweet, or comment on our show post, which you can find on our website and over on our Facebook page.
So, how was the show? Should we keep on going on a 13-year mission, or is it time to call in the Planetary Protection Officer to stop us from contaminating everything? Either way, let us know. Here's how you can get in touch with us. Why not leave us a comment on this show's post over at guardfrequency.com?
Or hit us up on Twitter at GuardFreak and leave a comment and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/GuardFreak.
Or you can also use the contact form on the website. And all the details for all the ways you can get in touch with us can be found in the show notes. Your feedback is an important part of what we do, so take a minute and tell us what's on your mind.
And that brings us to the end of episode 185 of Guard Frequency. We'll be back with episode 186 on September 26th, so be sure to keep an ear out for our shows over at guardfrequency.com.
But that's not all. You can subscribe to our shows at feeds.guardfrequency.com or by searching for us on iTunes. And if you're not doing anything on Friday nights, then you should come and join us at 10 p.m. Central as we record Guard Frequency Live over on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/guardfreak.
Do you like what we do? Want to help us make the best damn space sim podcast ever? Drop us an email over at squawk@guardfrequency.com, and you can also support the show by visiting our website, clicking on that Patreon logo, and becoming a regular subscriber. For just $1.25 a week, you'll get access to the raw recordings of our live shows, some Guard Frequency goodies, and an invitation to our Elite Dangerous flight group. And we want to thank all our Patreons to support us with their subscriptions week on week, and hope you'll consider making a regular contribution, because the more support we can get, the better show we can make.
Are you looking for a friendly wingman or two? We're active in most space sims and would love to have you join us. You can find us over at discord.guardfrequency.com. And don't forget about our sister production, Priority One. They cover all things Star Trek, from the TV series to the MMOs, the novels, and the movies, and everything in between. Be sure to check them out at PriorityOnePodcast.com.
We'd like to thank the entire team at Guard Frequency and the Priority One Network. Our thanks to community manager Justin Chivalry Bean Lowmaster, our artists Ben Sanders and Simon Charlton Edwards, our staff writer Jace Pentad, and of course our audio engineer Mikey. Thanks to our syndication partner, The Bass, and a special thanks to Ronald Jenkins for his permission to use his music in our show. Visit ronaldjenkins.com for more of his work. But above all, we especially want to thank you folks for tuning in. If no one's listening out there, the deep black gets pretty lonely.
Reduce thrust. 2330, Carol 15. Squawk 7700. Stay on the guard.
Next, we see what news is in your... Next, we see what news from your favorite space limbs. I did it again. Space limbs.
And transmitted information about and oops, sorry, I got a bad loop there.
The raw recordings of our live shows. Some star frequency. In short, we've decided that we need to get this into I almost said avocado.
Convoluted interpretation. Interpolation? Is that interpretation or interpolation?
Yeah. I know Tony said he read either a previous volume or something else that Wegar wrote, and his writing style didn't agree with him. So I don't know if Tony picked up the next volume.
Make him physically ill.
Well, his writing style for this next book was basically, hey, let's see what happens. And then he wrote it down. So, I mean, I'm sure he did more work than that. I don't mean to belittle the guy's art. You know, I'm not trying to do that. I haven't personally read it.
Let's do this. A writing style?
It More often than you'd think, probably. One of the authors I like started a book with a chapter-long fart joke, basically as a dare to his publisher to, are you really going to let me publish this with a chapter-long fart joke as the intro? And they did it, so.
But all we know is he's called the Shiv.